Thanks again for Brian, Dennis, John, for letting me come and blab at you for what will be hopefully at least entertaining, if not informative, and entertaining because I'm really nervous and you all get to watch me sweat. And thanks everybody for coming and for not throwing tomatoes at the end, please. My name is David, David Ja. That's how you pronounce J-S-A. It's Ja. There that is. And I work at Celio. We are a startup that's located about two blocks that way, and we provide a portfolio solution for students. And oh, we're hiring, and that's that. My name is David, and my stack is terrible. We are of a web dev stack, and it's you ever get that feeling? Yeah, right, where you're just working on something and then you realize, oh, I need to go back and work on like that application that I'm developing for my job, and it just feels like pain to get right back into it. You ever get that? Yeah, I get that once in a while, and this is about how I feel. And I wasn't quite aware of how terrible my stack was until this guy told me. This guy, his name is Varut, and he worked with us for about a year. And he was in the room when we made the decision to switch from Cake PHP to Node.js. And we were so excited about switching over to Node.js. And then he went and left our company. A year later, he came back and he was doing some contract work with us. And as we were having a conversation, he said this to me. He says, "We're not really using Node.js right." And I was like, "Why, Varut?" And he said, "Wasn't the whole point of using JavaScript in the back end so that we could share front end and back end code?" Then I looked at him and I said, "No." You're right. That was like one of the main things that we said that we were going to do was share our front end and back end code so that we could keep things dry, because that's like the first thing that you learn in like computer programming 101 is that you don't repeat yourself, right? Like, why are we doing things twice? What is this, like 2001? I don't know. But you know, web development back in 2001 was like that, where you know you didn't have ways to share things, and these examples are kind of the result of that. And these are the things that literally happened at our company. This is an example of HTML templating at our company before we were introduced to Browserify, and we had our backend which was written in Jade. You can kind of understand this is like a div with a class of media, some if-else statements, some logic, and this is how we did it on the front end, where you have embedded JavaScript and these tags that have this some logic and some templating, and you know it was okay. Right, until our front-end devs needed to change back-end generated view, and then they don't know Jade, and they couldn't, you know, get to the back-end. And Gandalf told them that they wouldn't be able to pass, and that's broken. Validation is another issue that we had problems going between front and our back-end. You ever have a form like this where you mess it up, you don't write an email address, and then you get that? Right, I was like, oh, okay, I'll hit my back button. That's cool. And wait, where's my email address? All the stuff that I typed in is gone. And this is, you know, how I feel about it. you've had this happen before to you. I know that you have, because it happens to me all too much. And then you're like, oh well, okay, I'll just copy and paste the validation of my client, right? So that you know, if they type in an email wrong, then I can give them some alert or you know, yell at them. Well, this is the regex for validating an email according to RFC 822, which is when they made emails, and this is 6,344 characters. And this kid says, "You're telling me that you're going to copy and paste that for every validation." What happens when you have a form like this, where you have your email address, your phone number, driver's license? This is ridiculous. And so if you don't want your user to feel this way, squirrel. My talk is actually about squirrels. I'm about to do a pivot. We love pivots. You got to get ready to do a lot of copying and pasting. So that's okay until your validations change or your conditions change or your backend does make a change, and it's just bad. It's broken. Model schemas, there's other examples, routing for Ajax, anything else that you don't have the patience to control C, control V. It would just be really nice if there was some way for front and back end code to share important parts of their code base, like validations, rendering logic, kind of a holy grail setup, as it were. You all came because you saw SemJS and something about holy grail. This is what I'm talking about. If there was a way to share your front and back end code. Well, there is. It's called Browserify. It's pretty sweet, and that's why I'm talking. Browserify allows you to use Node.js style requires in the browser, and what that looks like is like this. You just say require jQuery, and you have jQuery in your variable. You require underscore, you have underscore in your variable. The whole library is written by this guy named James Halliday, apparently. I don't know who he is. How can I use it? In the console, what you do, you npm install jQuery. This is for the jQuery library, of course. Npm then saves the file jQuery, the script, into the appropriate folder. Then in your script, you write $ or whatever you want. You can change it to whatever you want. You can have an octocat emoji if you want. But $ equals require jQuery, and that makes jQuery available. And then back in the console, you say browserify it. Browserify script.js into bundle.js, and that builds your front-end bundle. Then you add bundle.js to your HTML, and that's it. You can use jQuery at $ now. Success. So you're asking, what's this npm thing? Do I have to use that? Actually, you don't really need to use it, because you can actually require local files the same way that you require npm files. You just use a relative path. If your directory structure looks like this, you can write it like this, and your validation's now available as you would have expected. Now hold on a second. You just included arbitrary code from anywhere in your code base to be used in the front end. That's kind of big, because that's exactly what solves the problem that we were just talking about, where you're able to share front and back end code. And this leads me to implication number one, which is sharing code. Browserify allows you to use the exact same code in your client that you use in a server. You want that validation? You can require it. You want the HTML rendering logic? You can require it. If you want pizza, you talk to that guy over there. Where are you? Domino's, that's right. I did not plan that, but that's awesome. But yeah, they have voice ordering now. I see commercials for this. You see those commercials? No? Yeah? I thought we'd try that. Anyway, you might be wondering what exactly it is Browserify does here. No, nobody? Office Space? Anybody? Okay. Just making sure. Browserify, it does four things in relatively this order. It parses your client-side file for require statements, and then finds all the dependencies within that exists from that file and all of its sub-dependencies and stuff, and makes this gigantic tree. And then it concatenates all the files that you need together into one bundle. Once you've browserified, you just take that bundle and then you include it in your HTML. And then you're done. So I'm going to do a short demonstration of that. And just because I've talked about this validation issue, I'm going to do exactly what I had just been talking about, where we, I can't remember what I do now, where we include a backend validation onto the front end. So if I just open up my local host, this is your nice unassuming email address form. If I type in my email address correctly, I do not want to fall off this thing. If I type in my email address correctly, then it tells me nice job. Hey, cool. If I type it in incorrectly, then it tells me that I failed and I need to hit the back button, and now my email's gone. We're going to make it possible to have that validation come on the front end using Browserify. So let's open that file. And I'm going to give you a little bit of a rundown of how it works currently. This is JavaScript code using Express, but even if you don't use Express, you can kind of get the picture. Basically, when you get a request, it takes the email that gets sent in, and then it runs this isValid email function. And if it is a valid email, then it sends you nice job. If it doesn't, if it's not valid, it sends you, you know, this other failure message. The actual validation logic is right here. I have a 6,000 character regex. And then I have a module.exports, which gives me the actual validation function. So if I require the file, then what comes out is this function because it's been set to the exports variable. And so when I run isValidEmail, it runs this. Does that make sense? Everybody pretty clear? So we're going to do the same thing in the front end. First thing I'm going to do is get jQuery because, I mean, it's front end. Everybody uses jQuery, right? Or Zepto, or whatever you want. I can Zepto, the communities have some issues with Browserify. They've been fighting a little bit. But in any case, I require jQuery. And what I'm going to do now is I get so used to typing Celio, is actually install jQuery, just like I showed you earlier, if I can spell it. Cool. And I'll, just to let you see how that works, let's go ahead and open up that view, and we're going to include that script after we browserify it. So the command goes browserify, and then I find the script that I want, and then I send it into some place that I want to put it, which should be public JavaScripts something. So public JavaScripts. Anyone have any squirrel.js? Thank you. I'm glad you're here. Otherwise, I'd be in big trouble. All right. So let's include some squirrel.js. And now, if I open up the console, you can see that I have console.jQuery. What's actually coming out of the Browserify compiler is this. You can see that it's got some, well, it has jQuery in it, first off, but it also bears some resemblance to what I wrote here. You can see that it's all been bundled together into one big file. Seem familiar? Yeah. Cool. Now I just need to get to that form and on submit, do some fun stuff. I don't want it to submit anymore because, or I don't want it to submit if there's not a valid email. So not is valid email. And this is should be pretty self-explanatory. If it is valid email, then you know, you can go right through. But if it's not, then stop it. And also, just because. Cool. Finally, we need to get isValid email. Oh, right. I almost forgot. I need to actually get the email text. So dot val, is that name actually? Oh, no, name email. and I need to actually run it on the email. Now, let's get that isValid email function. You can see that main.js and isValid email are adjacent to each other in the directory structure. So I'm just going to do .slash isValid email. Did I miss anything? Semicolon, yeah, right. Sorry, I've written a lot of CoffeeScript. I know, I'm sorry. But yeah, semicolons, I get tired of them. I never know where to put them in JavaScript because some things take them, some things don't, and you just get confused. So if all went well, nice. I'm getting lots of squirrels. Yeah, but if I, it let me through. Great. Sweet. So now I have server-side validation and client-side validation with one of this same file. It's pretty cool, right? It's pretty cool. Anybody? Yeah. All right. Class for Browserify. Woo! So, awesome. Browserify only matters to me if I use Node, right? Wrong. Dependency management. There's a lot of tools that Browserify actually opens you up to, even if you don't use Node. First one is CommonJS. Side note, how many of you watch soap operas? Yeah. Right. My wife got really into this one, though. So that girl, she actually got hit by a car and then went back into the past in the prequel to this soap opera. And you can see her kind of in the shadows up there. She turned into like this, like, she basically became like a concubine to that guy who ended up becoming the emperor. And the guy on the left, he was the emperor who was like the dad of that guy. And then, well, anyway, so that was in the past, but then she got hit by a car again and she lost her memory. So she forgot that that was the past until she met that guy who is actually the same actor as that guy. So, you know, it's like, it's supposed to be kind of a sequel, but it's not because she doesn't remember anything. But then at the end, she does remember stuff. And then there's these other people who she saw in her past. And now there's new people who, she dates this guy first. And then he ends up dating her. And she also has a twin who she finds out about, who he's dating at first, which is really weird because eventually he likes her. But then, you have no idea what is going on because there's just so many random dependencies. It just feels like this, right? But wait a second. You're right, because that's exactly how global variables work. When you try to explain to your junior devs about how global variables in your, at least, okay, sorry, when I started trying to explain to my junior developers how the dependency structure worked if our global variables scheme that we made up, if they were listening to me and they kind of understood what I was saying, like you understood what I was saying, but then who suggested squirrel.js? Was that you? What are their relationships with each other again? Yeah, right? And it was even hard for me because my wife was trying to like tell me like all these things about how they all related to each other and accidents and lost memory and all this stuff. And I cared, but I could not remember. I promise I cared, but I could not remember. And that's how my junior devs felt too when I was telling these things. Like they cared, but it was just spaghetti code. And they could not understand what was going on. Oops, I didn't mean to do that. So CommonJS helps this situation a little bit. How it actually works is a.js exposes API via module.exports. So you set module.exports to something, A. And then b.js can consume A's API via require. So if I require a.js and I run A, it will find what was module.exports here. And since A equals this function, this will console out hello world. What you get with this and how this kind of helps to solve the spaghetti code problem is you get modularity, so everything is all self-contained. You also get scope isolation, so you don't have that gigantic global variable, which I just showed you, which is like backbone.view.work.s. You know, whatever method. And you also don't get, or you also get clear dependent, oh, sorry. thanks, MJS. you also get clear dependency management, because every file explicitly declares its internal dependencies, aka module exports, and its external dependencies, aka whatever it requires. You also get to test in Node before you get to the DOM and all hell breaks loose. And finally, you get the ability to use NPM modules, which are modules that have been published to NPM, which I'll talk about in a second. But as we've been working with Browserify at Celio, it helps people a lot to be able to know what files they're actually requiring, what they're looking at, and what each file requires and what each file's dependencies are. So, you know, I don't have to have as many sit-down explanations with my new devs about what is it exactly that this file does, but that they can just kind of look at it and see what it depends on and see exactly how it interacts with the other files around it. So that's CommonJS. The other tool that Browserify kind of opens the door to is NPM. NPM stands for Node Package Manager. And it allows you to grab any module, so that's any JavaScript, from NPM.js. NPM.js is a repository online that has thousands of packages, apparently about to push 100,000, so go NPM. And there's all kinds of stuff here. Some of the more famous ones that I'm sure you'll be aware of are underscore, jQuery, Cheerio, which apparently is a tiny, fast, elegant implementation of jQuery. And a whole lot of other different libraries that are here. These are just the most popular ones, but pretty much any JavaScript library that you would want is NPM-able. And that's why a lot of people have been kind of pushing for using NPM, because not only does it allow you to use, or for using NPM more, because not only does it allow you to do NPM install, kind of like I showed you NPM install jQuery, not only does that make things a lot easier, but it also gives you the ability to track version, track all your versions and your dependencies, and your dependencies, versions, and the, it also gives you the ability to consume not only NPM modules, but GitHub repositories, which is really cool, and as well as local files. So you have a pretty strong package manager for JavaScript, and it's pretty sweet. NPM has really made our workflow much faster when we're looking for modules, things that we want to work with, and should NPM all the things, even for front end. Up to this point, Node Package Manager has been mostly for Node, but that's just a nomenclature, because Node Package Manager has a lot of potential for use as a package manager for all of JavaScript, which is really cool. So, question, is it too good to be true? Well, a little bit. So there is a build step in that every time you make a change in your dev code base, you have to rebuild your bundle to see if it changes. So kind of like I showed you, every single time I had to run Browserify again to get main.js to recompile. Bundles get kind of large when you have a lot of dependencies. You have jQuery, you have underscore, and you have your backbone, and you have, or everything else that you have, all your internal stuff. The bundles start getting larger and larger and larger, and then you have to wait a bit after you save to see your changes. So you ever save something, and then you like go and you like click reload, and then it's not changed, and then you have to click reload again. So it just means more delays, which means distractions and context switching and cognitive dissonance. And yeah, I just really like this. Let's see that again. Sorry, Keanu Reeves gets me every time. But Watchify actually helps this a little bit. So what is Watchify? Watchify is kind of something that James Halliday, aka Substack, aka a guy I don't know, wrote, that allows you to cache all the dependencies that Browserify builds and then watches for the changes. And then when it's building again, it uses the cached dependencies, the one that it's put into memory, to rebuild the new bundle. So it doesn't have to keep parsing the tree every single time. And it only replaces the codes that's been changed. So rebuilds end up happening very, very quick. We started using Watchify probably about halfway into using Browserify. And it really made a big difference in terms of making a lot of our builds and our development process a lot faster. So up until this point, I want to see if anybody has questions. Yeah.
Yeah, Browserify, I don't know if you went over it. Was that an NPM install, or did you install it on Linux?
NPM install, yeah. So it's written entirely in Node. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry?
Is there a gulp module
port? That's funny you should ask that. Yeah, if you go to Gulp's own documentation, I just learned this from, I think it was Mark, right? If you go to Gulp's own documentation, apparently they have an example with Browserify. Because Browserify is actually, what it does everything in streams. So it basically creates the stream of all the files that it needs to bundle, and then it runs them all through whatever transforms it needs to run, like wrapping it in statements so that require actually works. And Gulp, if you've been working with Gulp, it just makes everything into streams. Its entire build process is built around streams. And so they actually work very, very well together.
And that package is called gulp-browserify, and I've used it extensively. It's pretty awesome.
Thank you.
Really?
Yeah, it wasn't native one. Browserify works fine.
Browserify just,
yeah.
I've been using Gulp
browserify. Yeah. We haven't started using Gulp recently, although we have begun to work on it. Actually, Victor, one of my coworkers, he's here. He's been working on getting Gulp set up. So you can actually talk to him. He's a big Gulp guy. That sounds weird. He really likes big gulps from 7-Eleven. but yeah. Require the bundles?
Require anything, like you would require statements just like you would for a require JS kind of application.
Yeah, so require JS and Browserify are kind of, I'm not entirely sure if they're really compatible with each other. You could probably shoehorn it, but I think both of them are kind of meant to be a dependency management solution. We actually looked into require JS a little bit, and we, after doing some reading, we chose to really try to jump down Browserify path. We wrote a little bit in require, but ended up choosing Browserify. If anyone has any experience kind of working with require and Browserify together, I'd love to hear what you have to say, because it sounds kind of actually interesting, combining AMD and CommonJS.
So yeah, you can pass a flag into Browserify called standalone, and that will create a UMD. It will wrap the Browserify artifact.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, really? Oh, cool. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Stuff is written with a common JS nomenclature.
Mm-hmm.
With a
UMD. Awesome, awesome. Yeah?
Yeah, what's the advantage of using Browserify over a Grunt or a Gulp plugin to do the build?
Honestly, technically, you're probably not going to get much, but in terms of developer convenience, there's a lot. You have one tool that's controlling both your dependency management as well as your builds, and so you're not having to add a lot of other tools such as like Uglify or, you know, whatever, what have you. And then on top of that, there are a lot of plugins that allow Browserify to do what's called a transform, and so you have a lot of control over each step of the bundling process. So, you know, for us, we use CoffeeScript. If you wanted to use CoffeeScript with Browserify, you can actually, as it's piping in each of the sources, it can transform it into JavaScript, and then it can do the concatenation. And so just having that all together in one thing is helpful. And then the other thing that occurs to me right now is usually having build steps is not as normal for JavaScript. I feel like before this point, whenever I was writing JavaScript, I would just, you know, write the JavaScript, and then it would just be there in the server. But then now that development requires build steps, it actually makes the process of building production builds much more understandable to us as developers, because it's the same process. We just add one more step to the kind of stream where we do minification or whatever else we need to do. Does that kind of make sense? At least from our perspective, that's what's made it a lot easier. It's that it's just convenient. It clutters up the app code?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It does. And that's why, so, you know, when you're looking at that bundle, I mean, you saw that, I mean, this just, hold on. Let me try to open that up again. Let's see if I'm still running that app. Okay, I am. You'll see that the, let me see if I can find you, Squirrel. Yeah, there's just a lot of clutter. This is what you're talking about, right? With all like the requires and wrappers and the logic. And yeah, this is a lot of clutter. Browserify actually works really well with something called source mapping. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. Essentially, what source maps are, they're this this very highly compressed, how do I put this? A very highly compressed map that allows you to map basically every line of code, please don't fall, to a source. And so Chrome released support for source maps in probably earlier this year. And what it does is these files can actually point to your actual source file so that when you're inspecting in the inspector, you're not looking at this anymore, but you're actually looking at the code that you wrote. And it has all the files mapped out, so you're looking at the individual files. All you would see would literally, in the console, you'd literally be looking at this. So when you're debugging, it's a lot nicer of an interface rather than having this, you know, however thousand line monstrosity. And the nice thing about source maps too is if you get used to using them, you have a lot of power to use transpilers or other things such as CoffeeScript, because those source maps can not only display as JavaScript, but they can actually display as whatever source you have. So right now when we work on our source at Celio, we're looking at CoffeeScript files within the inspector, and that makes debugging a whole lot better, and even better than it was before we started using Browserify. Yeah, source maps are big with Browserify, so you should definitely look into it if you're gonna look at that. Any other questions so far? Like this dog? Going once, going twice. All right, let's play. I have a little bit of a demo that I'd like to, like for you all to participate in, and we'll see if this works or not. Oh, I love it when things are right don't work. Bin www, and let me stop this so that it doesn't break things. Did I do that right? No. There we go. So this is a little app that I threw together to demonstrate Browserify. I'd like, if you have your laptops in front of, if you have your notebooks out in front of you, if you have your laptops out in front of you, then you can go ahead and browse to this URL where I've got a client set up. And you can get some practice playing with Browserify, as well as, you know, if you want, you can add a few of your own little flares to it. And if I can give you a little bit of a preview of what this client's going to end up looking like, but as you're kind of walking down that client, let me just keep this on the screen so that you can see. Can you all see that URL? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Gosh, I keep doing that. Demo print. Let's see if this is running. Print serve. Okay. So what the client is supposed to do, if you get in here. Is give you the ability to mess with the text that's in here. So let's see if it's actually working. Oh, I need to do one other thing. So that is there. Let's see if it's running yet. There it is. All right, so I got text showing up. I did all this work just to get text to show up on a screen. But this this client should end up looking like this, and you can git clone the project from here. And if you have Node installed, if you don't have Node installed, if you're on a Mac, you can use Homebrew. If you're not on a Mac, then You're going to have to do some Googling. And you'll have to have Browserify installed, which is actually a pretty easy install, just npm install -g. And then if you also want to get it working with that this exact interface, then you'll need to get the grunt command line interpreter. Uh-oh, things are moving around. What's going on? Hey, hello. Who was that? You got people showing up. Me. Oh, you're a little mysterious one, aren't you? Are you a squirrel? We don't take too kindly to squirrels here. So apparently somebody got that up and running really fast. I'm guessing you've used Browserify before. But for those of you who are somewhat newbies, you can go into your project directory and follow the instructions are there. Now, I did put a character limit on things, but I'd be curious to see, well, except for you, Browserify, okay, cool. Nice. I like that. What is this? Oh, gosh, no. Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't put enough. I didn't have a good way to get script injection working with. But I hope this is good enough, whoever you are. Squirrel guy, let's see it. This is, yep, that's a squirrel. All right, well, I'll just leave that over there. Kyle, oh, hi, Kyle. Welcome to Browserify Demo 2 server. We got SemJS for the win. So while people are trying to hack the script and add script injection, does anybody else have any questions? I'd be happy to field some while those who are on their laptops are adding alerts and things. This is kind of fascinating. It's kind of mesmerizing. I feel like more people should. I'd like to see what are on people's minds. So if any of you have any November 14th, that's Sunday. Oh, somebody's got an event coming up. Should go to that, I guess. This is subliminal advertising right now. If you at Domino's want to advertise your jobs, now would be a good time. Jobs or anything else you want to put up there. Yeah.
What's your guys' development strategy for shipping non-CopyJS compliant?
That's a very good question. So Browserify does have a sub-project. Let me just pull this to the side here. I did not make this canvas what did I do? Did I close it? Never done that before. Well, whatever. I'll be back. Oh, wow, okay. So Browserify actually has something called Browserify Shim, which allows you to take non-CommonJS compatible files and make them CommonJS compatible. Say that 3 times fast. All you need to do is, there are a number of ways that you can do it, but the main way that they are kind of advocating to do it now is to do it via your package.json. So any dependencies that you have that are not CommonJS set up, I'm curious what this YouTube video is. I'm sorry, I've totally, oh gosh, please. Oh, all right, there's a Q on the end that I missed. Ah, yes! I just got Rickrolled. Oh no, the ad is too long. Oh well, we'll watch the ad because it's going to be worth it. I know it. Whoever did that, good job to you. But yeah, so you can actually, it gives you the ability to get to non-browser or non-common JS setup files and require them with just the name. And so you see that 3JS is not, it's like a graphics library, but it's not, there we go. This is just gonna run in the background while I'm talking. Hopefully everyone's okay with that. too funny. The 3 has a global that it exposes called 3. And Browserify Shim will pick up on that, wrap everything in it in whatever it needs. This is really loud. And make it available at require 3. Does that kind of make sense? So there's a project that is totally geared towards answering that question that you've got. Oh, sorry, I can't hear you over the music. Can you speak up? All right.
We got a question for you.
Yeah.
How do you structure your application, right? So you can share all this code and like in other libraries, like let's say we're building a C# library, you have a separate project for your common, you can, you know, how do you structure your library so you've got your server and your client, but both share the same stuff?
That's a very good question and one we're trying to figure out right now too. We know that we have the capacity, obviously, to do it, but then I think the application architecture starts to get kind of interesting because you have to figure out exactly what goes on the outside, what goes on the inside of the shared folder, right? There is one diagram that was written by these guys over at Airbnb. I referenced this in the presentation, and hopefully I'll be able to get the slides up at some point. But they kind of created this diagram, which gives you a little bit of an idea of how they structured their code, where they have pretty much everything they want to share is in this pretty much the main app area. And then they have things that they don't want to share over here on the server, and then things that over here on the client. And then they speak to their remote API from this kind of shared code base. Now, how we've been doing it, there's a number of different ways that you might want to play with it. One would be to wrap everything that you've got that you want to share into node modules. And that's not necessarily publishing them to NPM, but that's setting it up so that NPM is able to consume those things, whether it's GitHub repositories or whatnot. That way, it's those parts of your code base are separated out. And then you're able to require them very easily without having to deal with relative paths because, yeah, when dealing with very large apps, relative paths end up killing you and get really confusing, especially if you need to re-architect or move things around. So you can try to build them into node modules. You could also create another folder that is just kind of your dedicated shared folder that Browserify is set to alias from. So there's a way to set up aliases with Browserify so that you can map names to a certain folder within your code base. They're things that we're all experimenting with. Transitions and changes are, they take a while with code bases, as I'm sure all of you know. And so for us, we've been kind of slowly transitioning over from what we were doing before with, you know, those really long global variable names and getting all of our code over. And we haven't 100% found the solution that we really, really like, to be completely honest with you. But those are just some of the things that we run into or thought about before. Although, if any of you who have worked with Browserify a little bit more, if you have any thoughts on that, please speak up, because yeah, I'd actually really love to talk with you about that. Bash shell? I'm using KaniMU, which is also running, it's just running an internal instance of Git Bash, which I think runs on Cygwin. Okay, I'm getting a thumbs up in the back. So, yeah, and I had to do some finagling to get all the paths and everything working on Windows. Yes? Currently, to be honest, I don't. The ones that I have been envisioning are usually ones that involve requests to servers, ones that involve, for example, so we have a username that every single person on Celio is able to use, or able to make for themselves. It'd be celio.com/David or /Mike or whatever. And that is something that we need to be able to not only check against the usernames, but also check against any other routes that we have existing, like celio.com/gallery or celio.com. And so we want to be able to have a request that comes out of the validation and to check against our server whether or not that thing exists, and then to come back. And that would actually be a pretty good use case, because in case anything needs to change with that, we could port it easily between the front and the back end. As of right now, we haven't really been doing that in the front end just yet, because we haven't actually gotten around to that part of the code base where we're working on that yet. What is this? I'm sorry for whoever was using this emoji. I'm sure it was really funny, but I just, yeah. You ever been to tableflipper.com? Tableflipper.com. Should I do this?
What does it look like?
Well, all right. It's basically it. You just find a. It just gives you a random table flipping thing. So I'm gonna get another one here. Okay. So you can visit that on your own if you don't want to do Browserify. This is the one thing you learn from this. Tableflipper.com. It's a great website. You can go do it. I've looked at all of them already. Cool. Does anyone have any other questions at this point? I did put this other picture for the you cat lovers who don't like dogs. Anybody else? Going once, going twice? Because I'm going to run out of things to say real fast here if you don't have any questions. Yeah?
Have you had experience, was it an existing code base that you integrated this into originally?
And yeah.
So how painful was that?
Well, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd say like a 4 or 5. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like rewrite. But it has created a little bit of distance because we're hiring, right? And so whenever we bring in new developers, they have to learn basically two code bases right now, because we have this kind of Frankenstein app at the moment, which is why my stack sucks, slide number 2, with the poop. Remember that? And so that's why that would be the main reason why there's a lot of pain, is just because there's like two different apps that are, or two different parts of the app that are basically being written. As we phase out the old stuff, I think we'll be in good shape. The only thing that has been a real nightmare has been maintaining this one modal that we developed in Browserify, and then we tried to port that entire file. So we took that bundle that I showed you and ported it entire wholesale into the old legacy app. And maintaining that has just been an absolute nightmare. So don't do that unless you have to. I don't advise it.
Would Docker make it easy?
I actually don't know what Docker is. Please.
Package manager.
I'm not sure, to be honest, if a package manager would make things easier. I wouldn't fully know how to answer your question because I haven't really used Docker. Well, nobody's got anything else. I have a few links for further reading. One's browserify.org. After about a year of Browserify, the GitHub repository, they came up with Browserify, the website. And it's got a bunch of, you know, nice little useful articles. It's got a wizard. He's cool. It tells you how to do things in a much more pretty and better way than I ever did. It also has a ton of documentation. I like the articles here a lot, so if you have any other questions that I can't answer, these guys probably can answer most of the questions you have. And then it also has this cool who uses Browserify thing, which is neat because we're not on there. I showed you that Airbnb post already, so that's on the slides for the reference. And then this guy has written a lot of really good stuff on Browserify too. I didn't see as much of his stuff on Browserify.org, but he kind of turned us on to Watchify. And he wrote this like a year and a half ago. So that's actually about how long Browserify has really started to been in circulation. And things have changed a lot since then. I mean, Sprockets, I don't even remember Sprockets. So this is also very good reading. Well, does anybody else have any last questions before I finish out here? All right, well, thank you very much. I appreciate all the time and for you guys listening to me.